Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Brian London, editor of the Gold Newsletter, also our host down at the New Orleans Investment Conference, which is coming up next month. Under a month from now, we have that conference going. I will post a link below this interview so you can get some more information on the New Orleans Investment Conference. Brian, let's start off with the Fed statement and Jerome Powell's press conference yesterday. Not a whole lot new that came out of there. No defined change in policy. No even defined time of when they're going to start tapering. Yeah, we can look at the dot plots that show the potential of a rate hike 1 year from now, but we all know how inaccurate these dot plots and those projections have been. What caught your eye in terms of either the Fed statement or Jerome Powell's press conference, or even on the back end of that, any market moves, the volatility post, any of that catch your eye?
Yeah, you know, it seemed like it was a tale of two Fed statements or policy statements, or two Jerome Powell press conferences. You know, after the initial policy statement, it was fairly dovish. They kicked the can down the road a bit, although saying we're really thinking hard about it and it's really going to be soon in reference to tapering. And then Powell started off dovish enough, and gold had actually risen about $10 in response after some initial volatility. Then Powell started saying, well, when we do begin tapering, it'll probably be over by mid-year next year. And then gold dropped about $10, so a $20 swing. It dropped about $20 to go about $10 in the red. So a lot of volatility, it sold off, and it's been a week since. So it was kind of a tale of two different messages all in one, the Fed talking out of both sides of its figurative mouth. And the markets are, you know, right where we were before then. I had thought that this might be somewhat of a catalyst for gold, for a rebound in gold, if the Fed had actually come out with some kind of a firm timeline or plan for tapering, because I thought that might release the selling pressure, the shorting pressure on gold, but it just didn't happen, and it was more of a muddled message from the Fed, and we're right back where we started, just waiting for some clarity from the Fed on what they're going to do and when.
Well, Brian, just as far as the tapering goes, there's kind of two schools of thought. One group is thinking they're going to keep kicking the can down the road and may never get there, and even if they start, they'd have to reverse course. And the other group believes they're legitimately are going to start tapering, hopefully, you know, maybe at the end of this year and be finished with it next year. What do you think both scenarios would do to the price of gold? So they go forward with the taper, or they get started and have to backpedal. What do you think would happen in either scenario?
Well, I think either scenario is kind of bullish for gold. You know, we saw that in December of 2015, when the Fed actually made its first move toward firm move toward normalization with its initial rate hike in December 2015. That marked the bottom of the gold bear market, and gold really rallied strongly after that. This time around, I think things are moving a bit more quickly. They are definitely moving a bit more quickly, but I think that might translate into, rather than waiting for the first rate hike, everyone's so focused on tapering that the actual first move toward tapering may be that catalytic event that kind of removes the short pressure on gold. And we'll see. But I think that at this point, because to maintain credibility, I think the Fed really has to begin tapering. It's just how far down that road will they get before the markets throw their typical hissy fit and tell the Fed to stop. At that point, the Fed's credibility will take a real hit if they have to stop tapering at some point. But they will do what the market tells them to do. And if the market cannot take tapering, if it throws a taper tantrum, then the Fed will have to react and will have to holster its guns, as it were, at least temporarily. I think that would be the real catalyst for gold. That would really send the price up, because the Fed would have been revealed at that point as somewhat of a paper tiger.
Yeah, the markets really are determining what the Fed does, right? Because the Fed does have in line a lot of the data that they said they wanted in terms of higher inflation, in terms of some of the employment numbers. while these numbers have been mixed, it does really seem like they are still focused on U.S. equity markets. But Brian, that brings in the whole discussion then of U.S. equity markets continuing to do fairly well. We've had this whole month of actually weakness in U.S. equity markets, but there didn't seem to be that fear that came into the market. You kept hearing everyone saying, it's just another buy the dip opportunity. Seems to be that way right now after the last couple days of trading. But what are your thoughts on the weakness that we saw over 3 weeks for U.S. markets, but no one seemed to get all that scared?
Yeah, they didn't. I think they're as scared of the month of October as anything else. When you look at where valuations are, I mean, it really is a dangerous setup going into October with valuations by just about every measure at record levels of valuation. And that's scary enough. So it has people skittish to begin with. But as long as the Fed has the markets back and everyone pretty much realizes that it does, then the party can go on and on and on. But it is you alluded to it. It is a strange relationship, isn't it? That investors and speculators in every asset class are just so tuned into whatever the Fed is going to do next. That's the way they lay their bets. What's the Fed's next move? Yet the Fed is answering and beholden to those very same markets as to what it does. So, you add it all up and it means the gravy train will keep on rolling and easy money will keep on being funneled into the markets to keep these asset bubbles inflated.
Well, Brian, another area we had chatted about just briefly before we started recording was the real rate environment and the different way to calculate it. And I thought you'd brought up an interesting point and maybe you could elaborate on it. If you figure real rates using tips or if you figure real rates using the CPI number, versus interest rate, why don't you walk the audience through that and the divergence there?
Yeah, it's something I've been writing about a good bit in our publications of late. And the key point is that the markets, no matter what numbers we're seeing, the markets are believing what the Fed is saying about inflation being transitory. And that's evidenced by the fact that the forward inflation expectations, which are, of course, derived from TIPS yields, are showing that real yields are negative only to the point of, say, 0.9%. So they're not really expecting that high of inflation over the next 3 to 5 years. But there's a lot of problems with that, of course. One is those inflation expectations are by the Wall Street types who are believing the Fed. And number two, the Fed has got its finger, a really fat finger, on the scale of the TIPS market and really the Treasury markets as well. So anything that's Treasury related, interest rate derived, has to recognize that the Fed is tainting and distorting those figures. So it's more directional than it is indicative these days. Real yields, according to all the pros, are only about negative 0.9%. But let's compare that to where we were in the 1970s, which of course was a tumultuous time when people were really worried about the destruction of the dollar's purchasing power and were buying gold and silver hand over fist. And if you use the CPI, as they did in the 1970s, to deflate the interest rates, because they didn't have these fancy smanchy TIPS yields back in the 1970s, all they had was a good old CPI. So if you subtract CPI from Treasury yields, you saw that real yields were negative in the 70s by, say, negative 4 to negative 5%, really deeply, deeply negative. Today, if you use the CPI instead of TIPS and forward inflation expectations, you see that real yields by that same measure are back where they were at the depths of the 1970s. That's the real disconnect here, is that we're in the same situation as far as real yields as we were in the 1970s, but we're not seeing the same kind of reaction in metals prices that we had back then. And I think that's just a sentiment shift away from happening. And once investors realize how powerless the Fed is to really tamp down inflation, because he really can't raise rates higher than the rate of inflation, because, the big difference now between the 1970s is we have this crushing federal debt And we, because of that, we cannot raise rates to any appreciable level. We certainly can't normalize them, and we can't get them ahead of the higher than the rate of inflation, because the debt service costs would swamp the federal budget. So the Fed, again, is in a trick box, is trapped. It can't fight inflation. And inflation right now is already at the kinds of levels that people were panicking over in the 1970s.
So, Brian, I feel like I've heard this argument before, that inflation isn't judged the way it should be, and real inflation is actually higher, and that should be a driver for gold. And now we're getting the whole other aspect of that, where inflation is finally starting to tick up, but we're still not truly getting the data or where inflation stands. Plus, interest rates are low, so this should be the perfect environment for gold, even if it's just the Fed holding interest rates lower, the general market, because they can't let interest rates run. But again, this almost seems like something that we have been talking about, or different iterations of this, for at least the last decade. So is it simply then that we are just waiting, to your point, for people to lose faith in the Fed? And it's not just the Fed. I think it would have to be central banks around the world. That seems like a massive global shift that has to happen. Is that all we're waiting for here?
Well, yeah, to some degree. Things are already out of control by a lot of measures. I mean, if we would have gone back pre-2008 and started quoting some of the economic statistics and financial statistics that we have now, you know, Fed balance sheet, inflation, interest rate levels, asset purchases by the Fed, all of these things were essentially crazy talk pre-2008, but they've been normalized. And that's what happens. People get, you know, complacent and used to these kinds of things, and they figure this is situation normal. This is situation abnormal by every measure. So really, what happens is in gold and then in silver is they muddle along and don't really react to things, don't really react to inflation, et cetera, until people really get past that tipping point and all of a sudden start to worry about the purchasing power of their underlying currency. And then gold makes up for lost time. And that's when you see these parabolic rises, like we saw in the mid-70s, like we saw in the late-70s, and like we saw really in the 2000s and post-2008. So I think we're going to get to that point again. The interesting thing to look at is that in all of those previous episodes, the price of gold went up from 6 to 8 times from its lows. And that, if we see that this time around, that's going to imply something in the $6,000 to $8,000 price range for gold when we get to the end of the cycle. We're all going to make a whole lot of money if that happens.
Yeah, that would be pretty good for the precious metal sector, Brian. But just to your point about the purchasing power, one other dynamic besides interest rates, besides inflation, but tying in with inflation is, you know, the currency. And you brought that up. So when people look at their purchasing power, I don't think the average person, they look at things in dollars. And when we look at the dollars, even the average currency traders just look at it as a dollar index, which is just how the dollar is measured against 6 other currencies. So they're all debasing at the same time. They're all driving their fiat down at the same time. So when you look at the dollar, it doesn't really move around much. It's kind of been range bound for almost a year now. But if you look at your purchasing power with inflation eroding it, you're actually, prices are going up and everything, and you're losing purchasing power. At what point do you think the general populace will start realizing that while their dollars may not be moving much on the dollar index, their purchasing power is continually decreasing, and that may put a bid back to the precious metals? When do you think that kind of a connection will go on in the general marketplace, or will they ever make that connection based on the way things are figured at this point?
Yeah, that's a great point, Chad. I think that kind of illustrates the difference between the average person, the average consumer, and the average investor. You know, investors look at the dollar index and think it's the dollar. It really isn't. It's just, you know, which currency is currently leading in the race down the hill, and says nothing about the purchasing power of the dollar or any of the other currencies. What really, for the average person, shows the destruction in the purchasing power of the dollar is the CPI, is inflation, but they don't really know what to do about it. You know, investors know, well, I'll buy gold, I'll buy silver, I'll, you know, buy some oil futures. I'll buy, you know, maybe some crypto. But the average consumer just kind of takes his beating and bitches and moans. He doesn't really know how to protect himself. He really, in a lot, most cases, doesn't have the ability to protect himself. And that's really the devious and diabolical thing about inflation. It hurts the lower economic classes and not the people at the top who actually benefit from it.
So true, right? Because right now you don't make any money keeping your money in a bank account. And to Shad's point, you're actually losing purchasing power. But you know what? Throw that money into the markets. And as long as the markets go up, then you're doing okay, I guess. But that's the whole issue that I think everyone is dealing with right now. But again, who knows what it's actually going to take to drive the precious metals higher. There's a lot on the horizon that could drive it, but it seems like we are still just waiting for the Fed to do something drastic in a sense. Brian, thanks as always for your time, buddy. Again, I'll post that link below to the New Orleans Investment Conference so everyone can learn a little bit more about what's going on this year. Thanks for your time, Brian. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.